This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
This is Going Green. This is truly a very Going Green episode, since I know little to nothing about anything that's about to happen. So I don't know if you know the setup for this particular show, Kevin, but basically, I get in a room or on a phone with someone who is doing something great in the world of environmental action, sustainability, responsible investing. And then I ask a bunch of questions that I have not looked at. I don't do any research beforehand about who I'm talking to. It's like we just met each other on the street for the first time.
Perfect.
So, Kevin, first of all, say your full name.
My name's Kevin Rowell, and I'm the operations director for the DLab.
Okay, great. And if people want to check that out, what's the website? Just, you know, let's get it off the top, and then we'll ask again later. We want these people typing on their computers right away or on their phones. Website for that is? Go on.
www.lightninginabottle.org.
Wow, that's a pretty valuable IP there, Lightning in a Bottle. Can we do a whole podcast on just how you were able to get that name?
Absolutely. I think we can work on that podcast next.
Yeah. So, what's that?
If you did want to find out more about the parent company, the DLab, you could also go to thedolab.com and see not just about Lightning in a Bottle, but also about our amazing structures.
Okay, great. Well, I don't know anything about any of this stuff, so I'm just going to dive in right away because we have lots of questions to go over and not so much time. So first of all, can we start with just, can you tell me a little bit about the DLab because before we get into Lightning in a Bottle?
Yeah, for sure. So the DLab was founded out of basically just a small group of friends and two brothers, twins, who were having their birthday party with a bunch of friends, and they started throwing a small party, and a bunch of their friends came out. And after a few years of doing this, it came to the point that, you know, it actually cost a little bit of money to throw the party. And so they basically passed the hat, right? But after the first year of passing the hat, everybody realized, hey, like, this is a really amazing experience. What if we opened up to the wider community? So the first year, which would have been 2005, I want to say. I have to fact check myself there. But they started selling tickets for the event, and then the next year it became full-on Lightning in a Bottle.
And so let's just go back a little bit. So DLab starts, it just starts as basically a bunch of people getting together and talking about, I'm guessing, what you could do about things. Is that right? What brought everybody together?
What brought everyone together in the beginning was creating a really awesome party.
Okay.
So it was a birthday party for two brothers.
Okay.
And what came out of that is really an expression of the essence of the twins, who are the founders of the DLab with their younger brother, Didi. They essentially created a whole immersive experience. It was music and DJs and a small set of stages and decor. And it was literally just a birthday party. It's all been in Southern California.
Okay, so the first party, the birthday party, sounds like one of the most epic parties ever. The first party is where? Like, where does that happen?
That was in Santa Barbara, in a little
okay. And was there any, you know, I'm guessing it's a confluence of creatives, everybody getting together, sort of sharing their own stuff. Out of that initial party, was there any, like, were there companies that were founded? Were there relationships that happened?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Lots of relationships were born, and lots of companies were created through the process of the evolution of the next few years. And I think the main thing, you know, is it all came from the same seed. And the seed was how to have an amazing time and use the opportunity of coming together to create immersive experiences for the people who were there. And
so,
that included the people who were in it and the people who were coming to enjoy the party. And out of that, you know, the phone started ringing like, hey, you know, we know you guys are doing decor and doing these things. Maybe you could come help us with our party. And slowly, the invitation was there to start doing little lighting setups, a little decor installations. But as the years went on, the community grew really tight around the family and around this idea of a creative group, right? And so at Coachella Music Festival one year, they decided to just take a sound system out in the field and start throwing a party. And all of a sudden, you have the owners of Coachella going out there going, what the heck's going on? What the hell are you guys doing? But you couldn't really stop it because they appreciated the rebel aspect of these parks just going out and kind of having their own DJs and throwing a party in the middle of their festival. And so they started creating an invitation. And every year they would invite the DLAB back. And it's grown and grown and grown. And I think Coachella's been an anchor for sure of the handful of festivals we've worked with as long as we've worked with Coachella. They've been an anchor, really supporting us in growing, not just from an idea and a dream, but actually getting into that breakthrough of being a company that provides a service that really gets our structures and our immersive environments out there and our amazing content out there.
So let me ask you a couple of questions. Sorry, I know we're not at to the set questions yet, but this stuff is interesting, and I still am trying to wrap my head around all.
Fine.
If you hire the DLAB, are these sort of little parties within bigger parties, or what sort of services do you guys provide outside of Lightning in a Bottle?
You know, the main services that we've developed. For sure, we have done some programming content outside of our own festivals. The main thing that we've been working on the last couple of years, though, is our structures and our physical environments. So if you have a chance to check out either the DLAB website or the Lightning in a Bottle website, what you'll see is a lot of really beautiful architectural installations which serve as our stages. They serve as our food courts, as our merch booths, as all of the functional items inside of our festival, but we also rent those out, and we're also commissioned by other festivals or corporate events. All different kinds of marketing and branding companies reach out to us because they want a really unique aesthetic for whatever project they're doing. We were recently working on a project with the Dior Fashion Company, of course, doing a very beautiful fashion expo for their new line. Just everything's been blown up on the Instagram and the social media now about this collaboration. And they were brought in by a company called Bureau of Attack, who's incredible design team, basically just reached out to us and said, you've got the aesthetic we need. Let's work together. And, you know, it's that kind of relationship or that kind of simple, hey, I saw your stuff. It's really interesting. What could we do together? And we're fielding, literally dozens of inquiries a day and throughout the week. I'm on conversations probably 2-3 times a day with different producers. And whether we're talking about a real project or thinking about something that we might do in the future, the creative process in that space is really, really just opening it up for us.
So, okay. So now let's get back to Lightning in a Bottle for a second. So we know now the DLAB, you know, the sort of origins of the DLAB and how you guys kind of started from a communal party. Now you guys have huge installations, giant festivals. There's, you know, services you guys provide to kind of amplify someone's event with structural stuff and curating. So the Lightning in a Bottle story, is that a parallel storyline that happens as you guys are building out the DLAB? How does that work?
Absolutely. Lightning in a Bottle, as I said, started out as a birthday party for the brothers and essentially grew into a realization that people wanted to experience both the architectural and immersive experience that we're creating, as well as having a platform for dancing, for listening to the newest music. A lot of DJs have started inside of our circle of friends. And, you know, lightning in a bottle is literally the evolution of a community. You know, it's so many people bringing different ideas and concepts together, but it's always been grounded and sort of held together by the Flemings, who are the founders of the company. And, you know, there's sort of, you could run around and try and keep up with the Flemings, but it's pretty much, you're not going to do it. You know, you're going to burn out, but you're going to constantly be at the edge of the inspiration with it. And I think the thing with lightning in a bottle is, you know, when you work with people and you meet people who are willing to push beyond what's possible, like half the stuff we build, you look at it and you go, no way, man, you're never going to build that. And we sit together with our engineers, with our architects, with our designers, with our build teams, with our material suppliers, and we go through every possible way to make sure that we can manifest a dream. And it's the same for our content. You know, with the content curation of Lightning in a Bottle, we're asking questions that even our patronage isn't necessarily ready to ask yet, about the environment, about, you know, social behavior, about science, about politics. And as you engage it as a conversation, as a direction, you know, a two-way conversation, to produce an event, to produce a festival, where the point of the festival is the experience of the conversations, and there are so many threads of them, like that kind of rich content is literally what has made Lightning in a Bottle what it is. So it started as a birthday party, and you can imagine, you've been at a birthday party, you're sitting around having some drinks with friends, a good conversation comes up, well, just scale that up. Now all of a sudden you're at a multi-day festival, and everyone around you is getting together to do that. And then they go to the stage, and they dance. And this year, amazingly enough, they're going to go, and they're going to jump in a lake and cool off and come back out and continue those dialogues.
And where is this? Where is this event?
For the last several years, we've been at Lake San Antonio Recreation North Shore in Monterey County. We're on a beautiful, beautiful freshwater lake. It's a 13-mile-long lake, and luckily the weather is gorgeous. And we have we're kind of enclosed in a little valley. We have hillsides all around us, and it's pretty much heaven. I mean, especially this weekend, the weather is looking pretty amazing for us.
Right on. So. Now, I don't know if you know this, but I work at an environmental organization. So I'm just trying to figure out here. We got this big event spread out of a pretty incredible birthday party and all these amazing services around it. You're by a lake. Let's talk about the environmental, the carbon footprint of not only your festival. We'll use your festival as an example, but of festivals in general, you know, what's the waste like? How can we, you know, how can we tackle, you know, something where there's a bunch of people who are looking to have a great time and obviously don't want to add to the overall impact on Mother Earth. But at the same time, you know, they've had a couple drinks or whatever, they're listening to music and that's kind of like the last thing on their mind.
Yeah, for sure. I personally come from environmental background myself. I own an ecological construction company, a natural building construction company that has helped pioneer straw bale construction, bamboo and earth construction around the world, helping create building codes for these things and working on projects like that. And one of the amazing things is when I met the brothers years ago, we immediately connected on, just like I was saying earlier, it's like you're having a conversation, right? So we're having a conversation continuously, and one of the threads of that conversation, a really foundational one, is environmental sustainability and proactively engaging, not just with our, you know, sort of with our festival, but also thinking about it in the bigger scheme of, like, we know that we have an impact. I won't say that we can, you know, reach out to every single patron and say, recycle, and they're going to all of a sudden recycle. But I do think that there is a more subtle value of social influence that we as festival producers are able to bring to the conversation. So across the board right now in the festival movement and in green building and all of these other, you know, in energy and all of these other markets or fields or however you want to think of it, there are various degrees of shall we say, value assessment, right? So, for example, you know, with us, if we talk about sustainability and carbon footprint now has very, formulaic methods to calculate and calibrate a carbon footprint, right? And I'm sure you probably know much more about this than I do on right. that level.
Yeah.
So we use a variety of tools to engage in the conversation. One of them, for example, is our waste aversion program. So we actually scale out all of the waste that's coming out of our event. So we can say pretty closely, you know, we're producing this much solid waste, this much compostable material, this much recyclable plastic and glass, et cetera, and this much sanitary waste. So we, you know, and it's an evolution. I'm not going to say we've gotten it down perfect. We're definitely always learning, but, you know, we're literally trying to catch as much of the metrics as we can because it's one way to look at it.
I was just going to say, is this something that you guys pass on as sort of open source research for other festival promoters?
I think, you know, where we're at now, there's a lot of our initiatives that we definitely have pioneered or pushed the edge of, found other people in the conversation that are having a similar thread of conversation, and then given them an opportunity to boost their own visions. So, for example, a lot of the folks who work on our green waste and sustainability teams or our green teams, they're working other festivals. They're thinking about this stuff year-round.
Right.
And what we try to do is take the vision of our green teams. We have three different green team managers this year managing our front of house, back of house, and our campgrounds. And each one of those management teams has their own perspective on what their influence is. So some of them are focusing on educational content and programming that's going to be accessible to the public. Some of the back of house teams are focusing on the internal teams. So, for example, with the DoLab, we're extremely special, as I mentioned, because of the structures we build. Well, we're building 90% of our festival site is an internal DoLab team. So our green team has not only a mandate, but support from myself and the rest of the executive team to come up with ways to help our staff become more knowledgeable and make the accessibility of sustainability real. So little things like putting proper recycling and waste stations at every single job site and daily communication with the leads on those job sites so that they're in the conversation, they're really actively engaging in the recycling, they're really actively engaging, hey, you know, we know there's going to be a delivery coming in, there's going to be, you know, pallets, let's make sure those get back to the shop so that they get recycled and used when we're doing loadout. Make sure this plastic wrapping gets staged away so that it can be recycled. All of these kinds of conversations are happening, and they're happening at every level right now for us as a company. So we have internal teams working just on the sustainability of our departments. We have external teams doing both media and outreach to our patrons, as well as actually physically going out and working with them to help move. The end of our stage sets, we have organizers out there who are literally there to help get the people who just dance their faces off at a stage to just look at the ground for a few minutes and help clean up. And by doing that, we're engaging the conversation around sustainability in very subtle but very real ways. And I think if I look at the gambit of festivals and the ambition of so many of these new, especially the West Coast festivals and some of the, you know, the international festivals that are born out of U.S. Residents or collaboration with U.S. residents, for seeing a real emphasis on sustainability. And I don't think we can take credit for all of that, but I do think that we've been a leading edge of it, and I think if you speak to those other producers, you'll hear some influence from us. And the big guys are taking a look, too. And honestly, this is the most interesting piece, is to see where these conversations that we have, they are actually permeating up and down throughout the whole event circuit, so such that, you know, Coachella is constantly trying to up its sustainability game. And we're in conversation with them about their methodology because we're kind of at a, we're at an optimum size where
right.
experimentation in cutting edge stuff is easy to implement and rapid to realize benefit, if that makes sense. We're not a big unwieldy festival. We're
right.
we still have that small family vibe. You're literally three degrees of separation from probably anyone you walk by. They know
right.
someone who knows you.
Right. So now let's get to some of the more creative stuff that you guys are doing. Correct me if I'm wrong, but are you guys doing eco panels this year at your event?
That is correct. We've been curating conversational content for a number of years. Previous editions of Lightning in a Bottle featured two separate areas that really focused on the curation of content in this way, the village and the temple areas. And what happened for us was over the last year, we've sort of gone through an internal transformation, reflecting in at what's going on in the world around us, the political scene in the United States, the different social scenes that are happening, and also, frankly, the occurrence of so many new different kinds of festivals. And what we realized is that while there are common themes and common conversations, what people are really looking for is like conversational guideposts. Like, I want to be environmentally responsible. I don't want you to necessarily tell me how to do it or tell me how to behave, but I want to have a conversation where at the end of it, I'm going to be able to make a decision that helps me move in a direction that's going to help me feel like I'm, you know, meeting my own personal goals or moving in a direction that's influencing social sustainability. So the Compass, which is our new area, is something that we have focused a lot of attention on. We have several stages and spaces within the Compass, which is most of a peninsula, most of one of our main festival areas. And among that content is the environmental panels. And the environmental panels are bringing different environmental educators and leaders from all different spectrums together to have a conversation or conversations with patrons, really trying to think about, you know, what are the bigger social dynamics that are in play? And it goes everywhere around the map, from looking at our sort of reactive natures. You know, we have a panel with a couple of really well recognized speakers called While We Still Can, and it's about proactive responses to climate change. It's about creating not just the dialogue of what should we do, but talking about what can we do, what's the spectrum of how we do, and what are the different metrics that are pushing on each other. Other ones include, you know, how fossil fuels impact our local communities and global climate. So looking at not just the environmental conditions, but also the social conditions. What is the actual impact to those communities that are experiencing either, you know, extreme mining or extreme devastation from extractive processes, but also how our little communities are going to be affected by the reliance on fuels, right? And then, you know, there's so many to go to, but we have also, of course, Paul Stamets' amazing conversations on mushrooms and mycology and consciousness. So really getting down to the plant level and thinking about how are these fungi communicating with us? How are they part of this process that we're involved in? I mean, there's just so many good things out there.
Right. And also, the other thing I wanted to ask you about was, you know, we've been doing a lot of work recently with First Nations. Obviously, we did a bunch of stuff last year in Standing Rock. I heard through the grapevine, meaning this document with questions that I've never seen before, that you guys are also using Lightning in a Bottle this year to be a platform for Indigenous voices and activism. So I guess my question is, how has that influenced your goal to promote Earth Care, the influence of First Nations to that?
I think it's something that we've all acknowledged is a really important conversation, because we sit in a really unique space in time where we have the consciousness to reflect on actions, historical actions, see, you know, that things actually didn't work out in either the planet's favor or our own favor. And in that way, we've been inviting indigenous communities from around the world to come in and talk to the patrons. You know, it's more about giving exposure and opportunity. It's not like it's our conversation as lightning in a bottle. It's that what we're trying to do is say, hey, here's a platform and you have a really important message. So we've invited a number of different authors, speakers, and also different community groups to really come and share their experience, you know? And I think by creating a platform and an opportunity for people to be heard, you know, it's like, I can't even say what the outcome is or what the process is, other than being present with each other in that way allows us the most opportunity for that good feedback and that real growth. And I think our global situation is such that we have to focus on that. You know, and even with Standing Rock, the second that the community started to really mobilize out there, we immediately did our best to support community members, to offer resources to for our own community members who were heading out in that direction. We tried to offer some cultural sensitivity training to both give resources, but also, you know, give the real human resources that allow for good listening and that allow for effective support to be given, especially in sensitive indigenous communities.
Gotcha. Well, so, you know, just a final question, and thank you so much for your time. The event's this weekend, correct? Is that right?
That is correct. We open the doors on Wednesday for early arrivals.
This week. All right. So, and we'll be getting this podcast out as soon as possible. So here's my two-part final question for this episode of Going Green. One is, let's do a little bit of housekeeping one more time and tell everybody where they could find tickets and information for Lightning in a Bottle. And then two, what do you hope people take away from their weekend this year at Lightning in a Bottle?
Well, if you're interested in coming to Lightning in a Bottle, you should definitely go check out our website, www.lightninginabottle.org. Find a lot of information about what's going on out here, as well as access to tickets. I think what is going to happen this year at Lightning in a Bottle is actually going to surpass any other festival on the West Coast, simply because, well, not only do we have this great landscape, but we have this amazing lake. And one of the things that I've experienced over the years of working festivals is that when people come together and they're partying and they're having fun and they get a chance to go out and jump in a lake, it's like your whole world changes. I know our teams out here working, we've been just, you know, burned out. We're working really hard days. It's hot out right now. It's actually supposed to cool down a little later in the week. I think people are going to take away the experience of fully living in a more communal type environment. And I hope they're going to be inspired to take that. My hope is that people will come to Lightning in a Bottle, experience all of the beautiful structures and the artwork that we've put up, the music, and the fantasy of having this amazing lakefront property as their home. I hope they're going to come here and they're going to be inspired to take the powerful conversations that they're having out here, even on the dance floor. Those incredible moments where you're in the zone and you're dancing to one of your favorite artists and you make eye contact with someone else who's in the zone. My hope is that they take these precious moments home with them and do their best to assure that they bring that kind of experience to their daily lives. Because when you walk down the street and you make eye contact with people and you give them that soft, warm, welcoming gaze, you change the world for that moment. And I actually think that, if anything, I hope that everyone who comes to Lightning in a Bottle experiences both ends of that. The giving of that warm smile and the receiving of that warm smile. And if nothing else, man, I went to Lightning in a Bottle and I smiled a lot.
That's great. Are there now? let me ask you a couple of questions just to wrap it up so that I can laugh to myself. Are there the headliners like Metallica and Taylor Swift or something? Like, what's the I don't know what happens at this event. What is the what's the music like?
Well, we have a pretty amazing diversity of music, actually. There's a number of different stages and environments this year. I'm definitely going to be looking forward to Bomba Estéreo, a Latin America band that's coming up. They're a lot of digital influence, but incredible, incredible soundtrack to Daily Living.
Nice.
We have, obviously, some major headliners. We also have our smaller entertainment spaces like the Grand Artique, where you can literally go and experience participants doing talent shows. I'm not going to lie, to me, the music is a huge piece of it, but the community experience is the reason to come to Lightning in a Bottle. It doesn't matter what genre of music you're listening to. We're actually going to have a heavy metal band. We will have a heavy metal band premiering on the Lightning stage during a sound check. The thing is, this heavy metal band is the same crew members who build the stage. So,
Very cool.
For me, it's about the preciousness of those musical experiences. As much
but yeah,
as
no, but you have some very, very cool people. I'm looking at the lineup right now. We got Jenna Aiko. Is that how you pronounce her name? She's great, right? Seen that? I've heard her before. Am I pronouncing that wrong? Yeah, maybe. Yeah, you got a bunch of people here. This looks amazing. And I'm looking at the visuals.
I'll give you a soundbite with some lineup.
Give me a soundbite with some lineup stuff.
Well, of course, you know, coming out this year, we have some amazing old friends like Bass Nectar and Bonobo, Rufus the Soul. I mean, definitely going to be throwing down. We've got some throwbacks to the beginning of the electronic music world like Richie Houghton. We've got, it's across the board. Perfect Stranger. We're going to be bringing out some psytrance just for the people who haven't had a chance yet to experience psytrance. As I mentioned,
what is psytrance? We could start in a whole next podcast episode. What is psytrance?
If y'all don't know psytrance, you gotta come. You gotta come and hang out with us. This is going to take it to a whole other level.
This sounds like a lot of fun for people who are fans of the planet. People who are fans of electronic music, or just people who are fans of getting together, having a good time, right?
No matter who you are, no matter where you're at in your life, if you can take the time to come out for a few days and experience Lightning in a Bottle, I personally will guarantee you that it will change your life. You will have an incredible, incredible life-changing experience.
Well, great. Well, listen, thank you so much for joining us on Going Green. And next time, we will be with someone else that I don't know. All right. Talk to y'all very soon. Thank you so much. Thank
you, man.
Yeah, talk to you soon.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.